Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 430 of the podcast. And it's Wednesday, 8th of May, 2019, as I record this early. We are moving house and I get the keys this afternoon and I'm surrounded by boxes. So it's all go in our house. So I wanted to get this recorded before we hit that time between houses when the internet doesn't work properly and you're on your phone. And oh, when you run your business on the internet, having it down for, it's only a few days, but it still feels a little bit scary. I know I can go to a cafe, but you know, anyway, I just wanted to get it all recorded early. So today I'm talking about voice search for authors with Miral Sattar. So we are talking about smart speakers, voice search, and how to optimize your book so people can find them when searching through assistants like Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, and more. And this is a fascinating topic, and I think we're only just starting to consider what this means for search, even though we are well into this new market. As I mentioned last week, there are over 1 billion Google devices in people's pockets across the world. So voice search on mobile is growing. So voice first, mobile first, digital first economies are continuing to grow. I found an article which I'll link to in the show notes that kind of rounds up a lot of statistics. And it says by 2020, so that's next year, 50% of all searches across the internet will be voice-based. Miral talks about 2022. The stat I found was 2020, so it might have speeded up. So 50% of all searches across the internet will be voice-based. And Gartner reports that by 2020, 30% of all searches will be done without a screen. So that includes the smart speaker type thing and also things like smart watches. 55% of teenagers are using voice search daily, and that, I guess that is a mobile thing. And also those are the people who are growing up and buying stuff. And also 62% of those who regularly use voice activated speakers are likely to buy something through the device. So this is definitely stuff we need to be thinking about, and this is not a million miles away. So definitely exciting times. I hope you find the session with Miral useful. So in publishing and bookmarking marketing news, just a quick comment on last week's show. So there were some comments sort of questioning whether any other store would be a bigger percentage of revenue than Amazon. So to be clear, Amazon will most likely to continue to be your biggest income source, even if you publish wide. It's unlikely that any of the other retailers will overtake Amazon for sales. Although I have had people on the show who make more income at Apple Books, some who've made more money at Barnes & Noble over the years. But Amazon certainly continues to be my biggest source of revenue for book sales, but it doesn't mean that you're not still part of the Amazon ecosystem if you're wide. You're just not in KU and you're just not on KDP print only, and you're just not on Audible or ACX only. So that's what I was talking about. I was not talking about turning your back on Amazon at all. We are embracing everything Amazon has to do except exclusivity. That's literally the only thing I was having an issue with, is exclusivity. I would be in KU if it was non-exclusive, like some of the other subscription models that you can be in without exclusivity, like Kobo Plus, I think it's Kobo Plus, like Scribd, like Storytel for audio. These are all subscription services that are not exclusive. So I just wanted to make that clear. I have mentioned this before on the podcast, but when I decided to pull my remaining books out of KU a couple of years ago now, I bought shares in Amazon. And I see Warren Buffett is buying shares in Amazon now. So I feel like I did a good thing there. But I believe Amazon's a great company and I believe in its continued growth. But there is a difference between loving Amazon, using their tools, believing in the company, and being dependent on them for everything. So I just wanted to make that clear again, not anti-Amazon, just anti-exclusivity. That is my position. And I'll come back to this again a minute in the comments. But say off the back of that, I wanted to talk a little bit about Amazon has published their 2019 SMB, so small to medium business impact report this week. And they have mentioned in the headlines of this, thousands of independent authors earned more than $50,000 in 2018. That certainly includes me. I earned more than that on Amazon, with more than 1,000 surpassing $100,000 in 2018 royalties. So I am not over 100,000 on Amazon alone. But I wanted to point out that their headline includes people like me and, you know, hopefully people like you. But they had a few other interesting things in this press release, which I'll link to. In 2018, authors earned more than $260 million from KDP Select, which is the KU, totaling more than $840 million since the launch of KU. So that's a lot of money. And I guess there'd be, yeah, really interesting there. Since the launch in 2007, hundreds of thousands of authors from around the world have self-published millions of books through KDP. So it's really interesting that they are mentioning this pretty high up in their briefing about small to medium business. So we are included as a small business or a medium. So I think I'm a medium business. I don't know what the definition is, whether it's number of employees, I am a small business. But there were some other things in this report which I thought were interesting, which relate to today's show. Builders and developers are shaping the future of Alexa. Third-party developers have built more than 90,000 Alexa skills. More than 90% of the Alexa-enabled products launched in 2018 were built by someone other than Amazon. So the 90,000 Alexa skills is incredible to me. That is the number of people building stuff for voice device. And also, the Alexa Fund has invested in more than 60 companies building with Alexa and launched programs like the Accelerator and Fellowship to provide additional support to early stage startups working with voice and AI. So this is part of the voice first movement, the building of a whole new ecosystem for voice first. So that's partly why I wanted to mention it. And then they've also launched a new website called Build Your Business with Amazon. And again, I found this fascinating. Go check this out because it's aimed at people who want to make money with Amazon. And it doesn't include just the obvious things. It has some stuff on there, which I didn't even think of. It includes becoming a seller, which we kind of know, you know, selling third-party goods or your own goods. It has merchandise by Amazon, which is print on demand with custom artwork. It has Amazon Handmade. It has a link for how to earn affiliate income, which I hope you're all doing, which is you can earn affiliate income on your own books or other people's books. You can recommend one of my books and earn a commission. You can also earn referrals by being an influencer. You can become a delivery driver. I love this. They're basically doing how you can make money delivering physical goods as well as how you make money online. You can also build in cloud with the App Store, Amazon Web Services, which is their hosting, which I use for this podcast and other things, or Alexa Skills. You can use KDP to publish books. It actually is on their page for how to build a business with Amazon. You can use Prime Video Direct to earn money streaming video, which I didn't know about. Or you can stream your games live on Twitch, which Amazon bought a few years back. So I thought this was an interesting report, mainly because it is directly associating KDP authors with building a business. And of course, I've thought this for years, and many of us think this, we are a business, but this is on the same page as building an Alexa skill or selling your products or, selling physical products or becoming a driver or doing your videos. I love this. I think this is brilliant. So I hope you check that out. Right, let's get into the emails and tweets. So because I'm recording this earlier in the week, I've only had time to look at some of the responses to the episode. But thank you to all those people who have tweeted and emailed and left comments on the podcast, because as I mentioned, I was a little worried about putting it out, but I've had overwhelmingly positive response. So thank you for listening. Xander Griffiths says, just crossed the finish line of the latest episode of the podcast about publishing wide. Great episode, long marathon. It's been emotional. Thanks, Xander. Jerry Williams says, it was as if this was written for me. I'm going wide. Welcome, Jerry, to the wide community. Harley Christensen says, I'm still taking notes. Joanna definitely went all in for this episode, and the gems she's packed in there are priceless. Seriously, it's a must read or listen. There are so many takeaways. Thank you, Harley. I really appreciate that. And I've had several messages from people who've listened to it once on the go and then again with taking notes. And of course, remember, you can always get the show notes. This is a big article. I think it's about 10,000 words. I mean, it's basically a book. and in fact, Joe Lobato says, holy moly, these show notes are incredible. Thank you for a mammoth episode. Marina B says, the episode is jam-packed with good info. There's also this little moment worth a lot of chuckling and resigned nodding. Thanks to the Creative Pen and Alice Rosewell for making me feel sort of spied upon. Which is when I said there will always be technical challenges in this game. Always happens. So thank you to everyone who's commented. I really appreciate it. And brilliant. Thank you so much. Right, today's show is sponsored by my own courses for authors. So did you know that I have courses on how to write a novel? I have actually written 14 of my own novels and co-written 5 novels. I also have a course on how to write non-fiction. I've written 8 non-fiction books and co-written 2, plus Productivity for Authors, How I Get Everything Done, because that is something I get asked all the time, plus Content Marketing for Fiction, which is all about the background behind books and travel and technical details and sort of decision points around doing a content site for your fiction. Right, these are video courses, but the lessons are also available in audio with slides and transcripts. So if you'd rather listen, you can do that. And you can check them all out at thecreativepen.com/learn. So you can go and see my courses there if you would like to. So this kind of sponsorship pays for my hosting, transcription and editing, but my time in creating the show is sponsored by my wonderful patrons who really paid for last week. Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks to new patrons, Lindsay Stevens Jr., Charlotte Pierce, Judy K. Walker, Kirsten Bromer and Seth Rain. Thank you, everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show, find it useful and want it to continue. And you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous. And you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will be recording once I'm ensconced in my new office, in my new house. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Maral Sattar. Hi, Maral.
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Maral is the CEO of BiblioCrunch and the creator of Barely Bear, a smart speaker within a cuddly toy. With a background in software development and several years developing digital initiatives at Time Magazine, Maral is perfectly placed to talk about voice search for authors today, which is just a super topic. So Maral, let's start. So what is voice search? Because some people might not know. And why is it increasingly important?
So voice search is speech recognition technology. It's based on natural language, called natural language processing. So the way it works is instead of typing in your commands, like typing in 40 words, you can actually say 150 words and get the results that you want. So Siri works with voice search. Alexa, Amazon's Alexa works with voice search. Microsoft Cortana, Google HomePod, they all work with voice search.
Mm. So many listeners, I presume, will be using voice search in some way. Give us some examples of how it's different with voice search to typing.
So let's say if you're looking for a book, if you type it in on a browser, you would type in nonfiction 2018, whatever period that you're looking for. But if you're actually talking through your phone, you would say, hey, I'm looking for a book from the historical period of the 1500s, romance, historical, that's kind of what the main difference is. It's based on long tail phrases and questions. So you're actually, it's basically like asking a question versus just typing in two or three keywords. And with authors and with people who are optimizing for voice search, you have to get into the mind of, hey, who's looking for my content? What kind of questions would they ask somebody else? And what type of things would it return? So right now, Amazon, we're so used to just optimizing just keywords and keyword phrases. But with voice search and natural language processing, you have to kind of think about, let's say I'm looking for Michelle Obama's Becoming book. Say, hey, Siri, can I buy Michelle Obama's Becoming book? Or if I'm looking for a guide to New York City, I would say, hey, Siri, or hey, Alexa, what is a great guide about New York around me? So you have to think about phrases and actual long tail keywords versus just the 6 to 10 keywords that we're used to putting in.
Mm, which I think is such a big mindset shift for those of us. I mean, we're, similar age, having not been kids with the internet, but getting the internet, and then developing our search for this typing market. I mean, I find it difficult to use voice search myself because I'm so fast with typing it. It actually feels longer for me to formulate a question.
Well, it's also Alexa can be pretty, pretty frustrating sometimes because when you ask Alexa, I think I saw a study that said Alexa returns what the book's about 30% correctly. Mm. And that's a big deal. So people are like publishers and authors are losing a lot of opportunities because of the poor search functions. So if I went and said, hey, Siri, oh, I hope it doesn't launch right now. Hey, Siri, who's Joanna Penn? It's going to launch your website, but then it's going to show me your snippet that you put on your website. So it'll tell me exactly who you are.
Mm. And just you mentioned there, so I was at London Book Fair recently and a report came out from Score Publishing, and Bradley has been on the show as well. It says New York Times bestselling authors and their publishers stand to lose as much as 17 million this year in book sales because of poor voice assistant search recognition. So that backs up exactly what you're saying there. But let's just backing up a little bit. Okay. So can you give us an overview? So you've mentioned some of the main assistants like Siri and Alexa and everything, but what is the penetration? Like, are we talking only rich people in America have these devices, or, what does it look like?
No, actually for voice search, a report came out by Adobe about 50% of users by 2020 will be using voice search. So that's half the world. And this is not just the United States. This is like half the people in the world who have access. And a lot of it has to do, and depending on the country that you're in, the mobile adoption is different. Like in China, it's completely different than it is in the US because we're app-based. In China, we first started out with desktops, but I was reading a report on China. They started out with mobile only. It's not mobile first, they're mobile only. So a lot of the voice prompts are voice prompt first. So 50% adoption in the world, which I think is a pretty, pretty incredible number. And a lot of these results that you get are not optimized. They're not optimal. So if I didn't know the rules about how to get my book on Audible, before I had connected my Alexa to my Audible account, I said, "Hey, Alexa, find me Michelle Obama's Becoming." And she said, "I can't find that book right now," which is a little ridiculous because it's the number one bestseller on our Amazon and nonfiction in the United States. But what I went through the Amazon page, I figured out how to connect it. And then it said, "Oh, Michelle Obama's Becoming. It's not in your library. Would you like to purchase it?" But you have to get the exact prompt right. It said, "Alexa, read Becoming by Michelle Obama." And the phrases have to match exactly what it's the title and the author.
Yeah. And I think, it gives us a good idea of how early, and I think this is important. I feel like we're early on. It is frustrating to use these voice assistants. Yeah. Like you say, you almost try something and then you have to try something else. But let's not forget that most of us do that with typing as well. Like we type something into Google and it doesn't quite return what we want. So we type something else, right? So that, I guess what we're saying is most things are not optimized right now for voice search because we've just spent 20 years optimizing for typing. Yes. So would you say that, some of these issues will resolve over time as more and more people are using it?
I think the speakers will get smarter. And I originally used to call them smart speakers, but then I realized nobody understood what I was talking about. I was actually talking about smart speakers and someone was like, "You mean people who are really good at speaking?" And I said, "No, smart speakers like Google Home, Amazon's Alexa."
Well, it's the Echo, isn't it? Because Alexa is the assistant, but the Echo is the
Amazon Echo. But we're all just like the natural term is called Amazon's Alexa. And even though it's the Echo Dot and the different types of Echo devices that they have, that is actually a smart speaker. Yes, you're right. But so then I started calling them Amazon's Alexa and Apple Siri voice assistants. So those are the assistants. So Cortana, Alexa, Siri are the name of the assistants for the devices that they actually belong to.
But we mentioned the developing markets there. And what I find interesting is that the Android devices are much more used in other markets because of the price point. So Amazon did have a phone briefly, but then got rid of it. So realistically, if we're talking that search is on mobile, we're talking Android devices, Apple devices, and then, other Microsoft devices, right? Which I think is what's interesting, because at the moment it just feels like Amazon's Alexa is everywhere, but actually they don't have the mobile penetration through things like Google. So do you feel like the Google HomePod or the Google search through the phone, has a stronger, marketplace elsewhere where Amazon is not so dominant?
So Amazon has the largest market share. It has about 41% market share for speakers in the United States and 31% globally. But if you look at Google, they've grown over 400% over the last 5 years. So they're actually the fastest growing. So, and they are actually on their Google support forums, they actually have guides for these are the optimizations and that they're going to be using things like the featured snippet that you have on your homepage to actually return results through voice search. Because the fundamental difference between web browser search, mobile search, and searching through a smart speaker is if you type a query on a web page, if you're a top 10 result, you're in good shape. But if you're number 9 and you're searching mobily, then you don't make it to the front page of a mobile device. Maybe if it's a longer screen, you're like the 4th result. But for a smart speaker, if you're not the first result, then you're kind of nowhere. So you have to keep on saying next.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because my husband has an Apple Watch and there's only room on that tiny screen for a few lines. So there's not even a first page. It's like there's only one thing. which is kind of crazy. But you've mentioned the featured snippet. So let's get into that, because all the authors listening are going, okay, so how do people find my book? How am I going to do a snippet? So what is a featured snippet, and how can we do that?
So if you actually go to the Google support page, they it's basically based on your meta description, on how you set your meta description on each page. So
of your website that you own.
On your website. So let's say if you go to thecreativepen.com, your featured snippet says, and I pulled it as an example, I'm Joanna Penn, award nominated New York Times and USA bestselling author. An award-winning creative entrepreneur. But then I Googled another well-known person, and their snippet was, I had a chance to catch up with the blog's founder, I'll leave his name out, and took the opportunity to find out what he's been up to. So it's not actually about his main blog. It's just the beginning of the post. Mm. So what a lot of authors do is you need to SEO optimize your whole blog. You need to individually come up with a description for each blog post on your blog, especially your homepage, and just summarize in to see if you can condense it into one sentence on what your blog is about, because that's what's going to show up on your smartphone. Like if I say, hey Siri, tell me about Joanna Penn, I'll actually do that right now. I'll say, hey Siri, who's Joanna Penn?
Okay, I found this on the web for Who is Joanna Penn? Take a look.
Okay, so you are the top result.
Yay!
And then the snippet shows Joanna Penn is an award-nominated New York Times and USA Today bestseller. So you basically have 10 sentences. So you want to make sure everything is condensed in your meta description that you set on your homepage. And you can do that through an SEO plugin. If you're doing a blog post or you're writing about a specific topic, you can actually set that. It's just basically one sentence, condense it as much as possible, and set it on every blog post that you write, or at least on all the main pages or your homepage, because the homepage for most authors are what shows up in search results, because they probably are the most traffic pages, or their books page. A lot of authors have the list of their books on their web pages. So an example of a good meta description would be all of Joanna Penn's books, and then list out the most popular ones. So if someone is searching through mobile, then they kind of get that idea to give them an idea of who you are. And it's clear.
Yeah. So many things. So first of all, just for listeners, if people use WordPress, then the Yoast plugin has this metadata snippet thing. So that's one plugin. And you've just reminded me to update my older pages, because you're right, these older pages, like my books page, I probably haven't updated that snippet for 10 years. So I probably do need to update that. So people listening who have an older blog, update those most common pages. But then the other thing is that so obviously if people are looking for me and they know my name, then searching for my name means they get me. But that's not what most of my traffic is. So for example, on the Creative Pen, a common search is how do I self-publish a book?
Right.
So let's go to that kind of search, or fiction authors. It might be, like you said at the beginning, what is a historical romance set in the Regency period? So how do we optimize for those questions so that we can be found when people don't know who we are?
When people don't know who we are, how do we optimize? What I found really helpful just for SEO purposes, browser SEO, is having an FAQ page, which lists out all the common queries that someone would ask and then share it. So let's say you don't know who you are, but you still want traffic. So the way SEO works is, first you have to have good web rank, you have to have good rank, you have to be mobile optimized, and you have to have fast page speed. And there's tools that you can use to actually test those things. So those are the basics. So if the web is finding that you're not loading fast, You're not mobile optimized. You're going to be further mm-hmm. down. So those are the basic things that you need to fix first, right? Is first you need to SEO optimize your basic web page. And then once you've mastered that, and let's say you're searching for historical, let me see an example, a history of partition in South Asia, right? So if you're searching for that type of book, I would probably put in the meta description, exactly a summary of that instead of, and in addition to the keywords. So the keywords actually help the discovery in Amazon and Google, but the actual sentence that summarizes it will be in your meta description. So you want to make clear that that's what the browser sees, and that's when people return your search results see. So you should already have a higher ranking, but then you want to be able to also translate those keywords. And then there's tools that we can use and come up with phrases based on the keywords that you use for your book. So let's say, I'm just going to use this. Don't hate me for using this vampire fiction.
No, we love vampire fiction around here.
What is the best vampire fiction novel? And it will probably say
Twilight.
You would say. So but on your actual page, you would put in the different keywords. Mm-hmm. But then based on the different keywords, you should come up with phrases on your FAQ page to kind of guide the reader. And also in that little snippet that you have, that what your book is about in a query form. So what is the best vampire fiction today? And then that's probably what a person is going to search for when they're looking for vampire fiction. And then there's different tools. I actually made a list of them that you can use to actually work on your natural language search. So there is Keywords Everywhere, which I really love. And then there is the Google Keyword Planner, which shows you the most popular, and I'm sure author use that frequently. The Moz Mobile Checker, what you could do is you could look at your competition and see who's linking to them and what keywords are being used by them, and then just kind of adapt them to your own.
Mm, and of course, our friend Dave Chesson at KDP Rocket the other one. If people, again, I'm going to summarize what you're saying, because I know for some people this might be a little bit technical, but actually, if you control your own website, this is not that difficult. So I got from you there that I should go to each of my book pages, and go to my snippet in my metadata and update that per book page to try and respond to people's search. Now, I haven't done that. I think I don't even know if I've done the SEO on my book pages or on my website. So I've got two actions so far out of this, which is fantastic. Okay. I think that a lot of authors listening are going to go, okay, yeah, fair enough. But most people are not actually buying books on my website. They are buying books from Amazon, Kobo, Apple Books. They're buying an audiobook from Audible or Findaway or wherever, one of the many places you can buy books. So we have no control over the metadata on those sites. So are there any ways that, well, I say we don't, we can upload our descriptions and our keywords, but how can we optimize or help people find our books on those other platforms?
So that's where content marketing comes in, and promotional images. So I'm sure a lot of listeners are familiar with the Stephen King Library, and the Stephen King Library is now available on Alexa, on the Echo devices, and it's also available on Google. But when my parents have a Google Home device, and my brother has a Google Home device, and we have a Alexa Dot in our home. So when I was trying to search for it, I said, "Hey, Alexa, I'd like to listen to Stephen King." And I said, "I don't know. I can't find what you're looking for." And then I said, "How can that be? That's kind of strange." And I said, "Maybe it's not available yet." And then when I went home to visit my parents, I said, "Hey, hey, Google, I'd like to listen to Stephen King. And it didn't really understand my prompt. And then finally, I Googled and I said, how do I access the Stephen King library? And then the publisher, they actually created images that exactly tell you what the exact prompt should be. And if you don't use the exact prompt, it's not going to understand what you're saying. And the speaker won't understand how to get the book. So the exact prompt for Alexa, if you have Alexa devices, Alexa, open Stephen King library. That's it. And then
everyone's and then, Stephen King is now opened.
Yeah. And then it, then you hear his voice and he's telling you about his collection. I was like, oh yes, I got it. This is awesome. And then the same thing with Google Home. It's like, hey, Google, open Stephen King library, but on the publisher webpage and all the blog posts about it, they actually have an image design that just displays that text that says, open the Stephen King library. They have a full page dedicated just on how to access it. So it's mostly educating the readers on how to get your book. So if you're talking to somebody, and I find it kind of, the complicated thing about Amazon is that it won't actually search Audible books unless you've actually connected Audible to your actual device. Mm. And Google Home actually doesn't let you purchase devices from Google Home. You have to purchase them on, you have to upload them to Google Play, purchase them on Google Play, and then ask Google to read that book that's on there. But they're improving it. And pretty soon, I'm pretty sure the feature is going to come with the ability to purchase. For Amazon Alexa, they've integrated music purchasing. My daughter accidentally purchased songs. And then I realized I should actually put the children controls on there so she can't purchase any other things. It's like, hey, do you want to put, hey, Zara, do you want to purchase Amazon Music to listen to Mother Goose rhymes? And she said, yes. And I was like, what? What is this charge that just showed up? Oh. So it's just the Alexa and Amazon Echo devices have integrated Alexa voice assistant for purchasing. So it's a matter of educating your readers how to exactly do it. And the first thing is having an audiobook, because they will find audiobooks and then they will find audiobooks that are in the Kindle store that are borrowed from the Kindle owner's lending library. If you're part of Kindle Unlimited or if you have Prime Reading, then you have access to those audiobooks. And also if you have another family member who has the audiobook, I can access it as well. So it's just making sure that your audiobook is uploaded to Audible through the various platforms or through iBooks. So actually I did a test and I said, find me, hey Siri, on my iPhone, find me Joanna Penn's books.
These books by Joanna Penn's are available on Apple Books.
And then it launches iBooks and it shows me all the books that you've published. And it has all your nonfiction books, because I think all your nonfiction is published under Joanna Penn and all your fiction is published under JF Penn. But I noticed a couple days ago when I updated the Kindle app, they actually had a little message in there that said, in coming weeks, you'll see a Siri shortcut to open your most recently read Amazon Kindle book. Mm-hmm. So they are going to have the ability to teach users how to launch your book from Kindle.
Right. Well, so there's a few things there. So first of all, you know, you are searching on an Apple device and it opened Apple Books, which makes sense, right? Because they want to keep you in the Apple ecosystem. And you can't actually buy books on the Kindle app or the Audible app on an iPhone. It says you can only get samples, right? Because they don't want the in-app purchase thing to happen. So I'm wide with my books. I publish my books wide for ebook and audiobook. So this is another thing for people to consider, I think. So if you're in KDP Select, you're only going to come up if you're searching through, say, an Alexa, or if you use one of those other shortcuts. Right. Whereas if you're on Google Play, and this is why I think Google Play is increasingly important, right, because of the Android devices and because their phones are cheaper, that's going to give better penetration over time. Yeah. Plus, I mean, we've just seen, as you and I speak, Apple has just launched a credit card, which I'm just like, what the hell? And that to me is something that dents their image.
We need more credit cards, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they becoming a finance company? And I've been on an Apple, you know, an Apple person for like 10 years. And that is kind of difficult. But I know people who've left the ecosystem and also left the Amazon ecosystem because of kind of a protest against the domination of these companies. So it is really interesting what's happening. So I guess that's my plea for wide publishing, because if you're not on all the platforms, and then you'll only be searchable through certain assistants.
Right. So you should have an audiobook if you want to be accessible through voice search, because if you're doing voice search, you probably want to listen to the book, and you probably want to purchase the book that you'd like to listen to. And also, an interesting fact, I went to a podcast conference a couple weeks ago, and podcasts are kind of competing, and just telling good stories and sharing good stories are competing against the Hulus, and they're competing against the Netflix, because it's a form of entertainment and it's much quicker to actually listen to a book than to actually sit there and read it. You can do it on your commute. You can do it on your train. I see people listening. Sometimes I see them with their audio device, their Audible apps, you could see the thing working on the train. And it's nice because in our trains, we don't have Wi-Fi, so you kind of need an offline experience. So you are seeing the growth of audio as entertainment. And a lot of publishers are putting certain types of contents on podcasts. The Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, they put a lot of their audiobooks on podcasts. We listen to them and we love them, and it's kind of like listening to a show. And authors also have a unique opportunity of kind of providing that same experience. So that's why it's really important to have an audiobook. And there's different places, I think, to get it. You could do ACX, you could do Findaway Voices. Findaway Voices actually uploads it to all the platforms, but similar to other places like Smashwords and Draft2Digital, they do take a cut on top of that. So you could individually upload. If you do an audiobook, you should have it everywhere. So you should have it in iBooks, you should have it on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. If you want it to be prioritized in Alexa, you can also have it uploaded to Google Play. So you kind of want to maximize the different places where you upload your books.
Yeah, just to be clear, if you're in Kindle Unlimited or KDP Select, you can't be everywhere. Yeah. And I'm going to do a completely separate podcast on going wide. You can be in KDP Select for your ebook and go wide with your audiobook. Okay. So yeah, there's nothing stopping people doing that. So if people want to be in Select for ebook, completely fine, but why not go wide for audio, especially at this? I think this is a growth area, as you know, it is a growth area. All the statistics show that it is. So it's interesting. You mentioned podcasts there. Obviously, I now have two podcasts, and my main sort of way of making a podcast findable is using transcripts, because they are natural language. They are us speaking. So do you think that having a transcript as opposed to just bullet point show notes would make that more findable?
I think transcripts are really good for SEO. So it would make it more findable on the web. Plus, there's a lot of new podcast companies evolving, or they've also launched, like there's a couple that have just gotten $100 million and funding to make podcasts more searchable, because the iPhone, Apple has the largest podcast network, but they don't really focus on discovery. And I think they have one engineer dedicated to their whole podcast section. So there's other companies who are kind of leveraging the podcast's success. And if you think about it, a podcast is an iPodcast, right? So they came up with the idea, but I don't know if they're going to do that much with it. They haven't really invested. So other companies are actually doing it, and they're scraping data from podcasts and podcast notes. So a transcript definitely helps.
Mm, yeah. I mean, at the moment, as you say, audio is not searchable, like just plain audio is not searchable. Right. So you have to have some searchable way of doing it. But I find this this to me all feeds into the AI discussion, because over time, they will find some way to take our real-time voices, create whatever they create, and then make it searchable. So I'm pretty sure it will come, but not right now. So let's talk about your Bearily Bear, which I've seen when we met in Philadelphia, which is a smart speaker in a cuddly toy. So because you have kids, young kids, so what is it? Why do parents like audio and voice search?
So I read a report a long time ago. I like audio because it's a way to help kids learn and also improve their listening skills without staring at a screen. We minimize screens because, I mean, other people have different types of children, but my kids, when they've been on an airplane and we let them use screens on airplane, and the minute we take it away from them, they get very aggressive and they become hostile. So, but there is actually a study that I read that did say that for a lot of kids, the side effects is it's like crack. And once you take it away from them, they get like really aggressive. And I was like, wow, that's just like my kids. So we don't really let them, we don't let them watch TV because they're still young. And they're Montessori kids, and they're all about like physical experience and improving your listening skills and learning through manipulatives and hands. And so at nighttime, when my children, like most children, my children are 3 and 5 and a half, one would come out and be like, I'm hungry. And the other one would be like, I need water. And I'm like, or I have to go to the bathroom. I was like, you just went, but if you want, go again. So then what I did is I actually got this little cheap speaker and I said, okay, you can listen to the Nutcracker, but you can only listen if you stay in your room. And then for my son, I said, you can listen, but you can only listen to this music while you're in your crib. And then at one point I found that they were like hugging the speaker and I felt really, really sad. So I said, okay, maybe we should have something a little bit more loving and engaging. So that's where the idea of Bearily Bear came through. And then while we were looking for stories, and I don't like the traditional stories like Thumbelina or the traditional princess stories, because they're all about saving a princess. And there's always some part that's been edited. I think the original Sleeping Beauty story, she woke up with child, which is a little insane. So
those grim stories are pretty grim, to be honest. The original ones.
I was like, wow, like I don't want my daughter listening to these. So we rewrote a bunch and we updated them for modern times. So you can actually listen to stories through the little Bearily Bear.
Which is just awesome. And what's so interesting, your kids were cuddling the speaker. And that's fascinating because I think it's partly this kind of comfort of listening. And I was reflecting that I remember listening to Peter and the Wolf, the Prokofiev version with the classical music, when I was young. And I guess it would have been on tape because everything, it was all on tape back then, wasn't it? But you have an emotional connection to the story, and they were cuddling it, which is awesome. So what's happening with Bearily Bear? Are you selling it? Are you licensing it? What's going on?
So we're kicking it off, the Kickstarter next month, actually. So on barelybear.com. So stay tuned.
Yeah. No, well, that's fantastic because this is, you know, you're an entrepreneur and, you know, you've started lots of companies and you run your own companies and, you know, this is brilliant stuff. And of course, then you will have the content for it as well. And this is the way it's going, which I think is fantastic. But Just on for, I guess, like I said earlier, you and I, you know, being a bit older, I mean, I'm not that old, in our 40s, you know, and it's kind of like how we use voice is different. So your kids, how do your kids talk to the speaker? Like, how is their use of voice search different to ours?
Well, they've never done a Google search or they've never done a mobile search. So my daughter will say, Alexa, play Mother Goose songs. But, and then I kind of saw that translating into her, it's very command based. Mm. So I think there's a skill that you can turn on in Alexa called polite mode.
Yeah.
So it's, so now she has to say, Alexa, please play Mother Goose songs. And then she has to say, thank you. So they're kind of just, they're growing up where command prompts are the way to get access to what they need when they're listening to things. Mm-hmm. And I know kids, I know friends who have smart TVs and the kids just say, open Netflix, and you can open Netflix. So the kids are actually, my kids are growing up in a totally different way. I mean, when I was growing up, that's when we introduced dial-up modems.
Yeah.
Like 1200.
Remember them?
Yeah. And then when the speed doubled to 2400, we thought it was like the most exciting thing ever. I was like, wow, the speed doubled. So they're kind of growing up in a completely on-demand economy, which, you know, there's positives and there's negatives, but children are like, they're going to be trained in voice search. So the more the AI improves, the more inputs they get, then the more it's going to improve. So it's good. But I prefer smart speakers because, and a lot of parents I know prefer smart speakers because of the whole listening thing. It makes car rides more bearable. They can listen to a story instead of, you know, just like watching a screen or
Oh, and it's interesting. You just kind of sparked something there. You said they're used to asking for what they need.
Yes.
And how, I mean, that's the same when we go looking for a book. So we might not necessarily say, you know, maybe some people say, what's the best vampire novel this week or something, but someone else might say, you know, I'm feeling really depressed with the state of politics. Give me, you know, tell me a book that will make me happy for, you know, and escape my life for a bit. You know, that need is what we meet with fiction, I think. Or they might go with a question, you know, I've got a rash on my stomach. You know, tell me what that is, that need to fix something. So I think this is probably the big message for everyone listening is, you know, this is the way search is going, but you need to be putting yourself in the head of the person searching,
right?
Which is pretty, and like you've been showing us, testing it. I love that you've been showing us with me, obviously, but you know, and that's the thing, people, like people listening, just give it a go and see what you say and what comes up, right? That's probably the best thing. Right, so you have an awesome course on how authors can do voice search and lots of other things. So tell us, where can people find you? What's in the course and where's everything you do online?
So you can find me on Learn Self Publishing Fast, and we have a bunch of courses, and our newest course is our voice search optimization course and how to leverage Alexa, Amazon's Alexa, Google's a HomePod to actually sell books. So it's Learn Self Publishing Fast. We have step-by-step videos, and then we have training exercises and materials to help you do the optimizations. And then for everyone who's listening, we'll also give you access to our SEO, our full SEO course, and our Amazon Keywords course as well, which are video courses. But we also have like the training packets as well that go along with those courses.
So that's just learnselfpublishingfast.com.
Yes. Yeah.
There we go. Fantastic. And if anyone has any questions, they can find you there.
Yes.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Raoul. That was great.
Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed today's show on optimizing for voice search. And this is definitely a topic I'll be revisiting over time as part of my own focus on voice and audio. If you'd like to check out Morale's course on how to leverage voice search to sell books, you can use my link, thecreativepen.com/voice search. And you can get 50% off the course by using the promo code thecreativepen, all caps, on checkout. So I will put that in the show notes, but thecreativepen.com/voice search and 50% off by using promo code thecreativepen on checkout, and thecreativepen in all caps. Right, so next week I'm talking about self-publishing and marketing literary fiction with award-winning novelist Jane Davis. Over the years, I have had a lot of literary authors say, oh, well, you know, self-publishing works for genre fiction or non-fiction, but not for us. but I have had a number of literary authors on the show, and I wanted to bring Jane on as well. She's been winning prizes recently, so her work is top quality. But also, she has had some success with various promotional and marketing things. So I wanted to share that. So happy writing. And I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.